driver. Mama says that I never, never mind her. Got no brains, I'm insane. The teacher says that I'm one big brain. I'm like a laser.
Well, welcome to the situation report for Monday. It's actually Tuesday. Feels like Monday, May 28th. And it's a little quiet riot. Some days it feels like you're banging your head, and it actually was appropriate for today because I feel like I was banging my head all day. There's a number of conversations that are going on right now that I think are narrative and not real. and they're not worth paying attention to. Case in point is Robert De Niro. Why is Robert De Niro getting so much airtime right now in the press? He's all over Twitter. He's all over True Social. And these staged exchanges, all of them, they are all literally, they're just narrative. It's all they are. And, you know, De Niro has no play in this other than he's just been a vocal Trump. He's just a Trump hater is all he is. He has no relevance to the court case or anything else, but yet they put that guy out front. It's just distraction. It's just noise. And I don't know why people pay so much attention to it. Well, I do know why people pay so much attention to it. Let me address that. Part of it is you have the emotional side of any narrative that they want you to buy into. The more emotional that you get, the more emotionally attached you get to a specific narrative, the more they can manipulate you and control you through your emotions. And it's been, if you don't think that every American president since FDR, I'm going to even go back even farther, since Teddy Roosevelt, has not used propaganda to manipulate the American public, then you really haven't been studying history. Propaganda has been around for a very long time, and it's been used by every president, every world leader for generations. This is not a new phenomenon. And the whole intent of it, like psychological operations, I'm going to read the definition of the PSYOPs. Psychological operations are operations designed to convey selective information indicators to audiences to influence their emotions, motives, and objective reasoning in order to affect the behavior of governments, organizations, groups, and individuals. Roughly translated, they put the Cujo Vulcan mindfuck on you so that you're emotionally charged and you react versus using discernment and critical thinking. And they've dumbed down the education system, they've introduced social media, and they've created a stage so guys like Robert De Niro can captivate your emotions. And they use those emotions to drive the entire population to support things that they would never accept under any circumstances unless they were emotionally charged. And we're seeing that play out across the spectrum in all of social media. I'm about three quarters of the way through a book called How to Win an Information War. It's written by a Ukrainian professor, and the book is laced with anti-Russian, anti-Putin tropes throughout the entire book. And it does a really good job. He does a really good job explaining how the British used counter propaganda against the Germans. And here's the rub. The thing with propaganda is there's just enough truth in it for it to be real, but not enough truth for you to hang your hat on it and call it a source of truth. And if you go back to way before Adolf Hitler, go back to World War I and look at the way that they used propaganda in World War I to bring the Americans into the war, to bring the isolationist view around the world, and literally dispel all of that. They used the same propaganda that, and George Bush, George W. Bush, Karl Rove, Rumsfeld, they all took a page out of the World War I propaganda playbook and used it against the Muslims, the War on Terror, and they've replayed the same script over and over again. We're seeing the same script. Go back to Joe Biden's, I think it was his first State of the Union address, where he was, maybe it wasn't a state, he gave a speech, and I think it was at Mount Rushmore, and he was all draped in red, and they had the red banners. If you go watch the movie V for Vendetta, you're going to see the exact same layout. They're just replaying the same scripts over and over and over again. And how it catches the American people is people are just emotionally attached to all of these different issues that don't matter. Look at abortion. Look at how emotionally attached people are to abortion still today. They're just immersed in it. It's an existential crisis. It's unbelievable when you see how emotionally attached people are to all these different issues. It literally drives a wedge to the entire country because of the emotional side of it. And that's the sociological side of the war. That's the sociological aspects of the propaganda campaigns that are being leveraged. And it's not just happening here. It's happening across Europe. It's happening across Asia. The Chinese are the Chinese, the Russians, the US, they are the arbiters of propaganda right now. And it's not just aimed at the US. It's literally they're aimed at their own people. This notion that propaganda is just used by one government or one leader is just nonsense. It's laced into every aspect of politics now and has been since before World War I. When mass media came out and it really started to grow across the planet with print and with newspapers, that's when you saw media moguls. Like, most people don't even know who the Hearsts are. There's a host of family names that started media. People know Murdoch. They know a few others that are in the media business now, but they don't know the original big families that created mass media. And part of mass media's appeal was that it was considered a source of truth. But people don't realize that source of truth has always been tainted and controlled by very, very rich people. And it goes way, way back. It's not a new phenomenon. Just like the things that we're seeing, just like we're seeing right now, play out across social media, play out across movies and print. I mean, you think it's coincidence that a book called How to Win the Information War came out during the Ukraine war? It's literally designed to sway public opinion, and it's laced with emotionally charged stories about where he was personally interacting with Ukrainians that didn't want to live under Russian rule. And the Russians themselves don't like Putin. It's just laced with anti-Russian tropes. If you're discerning and you can literally pick it out while you're going through it, then it doesn't charge you up emotionally. I listen to it, just annoys me. It's like, come on, dude, you got to do better than that. If you're gonna package bullshit, you got to freshly package it and make it original. Throw in some laced story about some oppressed Ukrainian at the hands of a Russian soldier. Come on, that story's as old as World War I stories. But therein lies the issue, is that everybody gets emotionally attached to all these different narratives, and off to the races we go. That's how you see an exchange like that today. And I'm not convinced that those aren't paid Trump supporters that are out there causing problems. You think the left is the only one that pays supporters to go out and show their support, especially for a specific issue? Nah, they're not. And go back to 9/11. How many times after 9/11 did you hear un-American? How many people were called un-American because they didn't buy into some narrative or give carte blanche for the U.S. to do whatever the hell they wanted in the quote-unquote war on terror? You notice how the last several wars that we fought have been against enemies that could never be defined? And when our leadership went in front of a podium, they said less in 15 minutes than most of us say our entire lives, and throw generalities out there that people latched onto. Here's my favorite. If we don't fight them there, we'll fight them here. That was some grade A, well-packaged, well-delivered, undefinable bullshit. And people drank that shit up like it was the nectar of the gods. And then you started hearing Americans say shit like they're savages. Go watch American Sniper. Go listen to the rhetoric that Bradley Cooper uses throughout that movie. And you will see the avid effect of propaganda in its purest form being laced throughout a movie. They literally planted the seed for Americans to hate Muslims, and it sank in, and people drank it in. And nobody asked the question. I mean, literally nobody asked the question. Where's the wreckage from the Pennsylvania aircraft? Where's the wreckage from the Pentagon aircraft? You could not ask those questions. And then all of a sudden, cancel culture is new. This stuff has been going on for decades. That's why we've been talking about green flag operations. That's why we've been talking about, you know, black flag operations and black swan events. Because these are all terms that the elite throw around. And, you know, I had a conversation with Conrad today. And he had listened to my Tom Luongo interview with Mike Ferris last Friday. And, you know, that whole thing on Friday, I had coffee with Mike Ferris on Thursday. And then he's like, dude, you should come on the show with Luongo. And I always like sitting there with Tom Luongo because he's uber smart, man. Him and Alex Craner, man, they create a black hole with all the knowledge those guys have. And it's hard to be in his orbit because he's so knowledgeable about history. He's so knowledgeable about the financial system. And he was a chemist. He started out as a chemist before he got into the financial stuff. So he's wicked smart anyway. And you just have a 15-minute conversation. We were talking before the show, and he was asking me why I hadn't monetized stuff. And I was telling him that I'm going to have to because, you know, like everybody else, a lot of people I know are unemployed and I'm in the same place. So I'm going to have to start monetizing stuff just to make ends meet. But during that conversation, we were talking about the propaganda war, and we didn't get to it in the show because we went a bunch of different directions. And the thing I like about Tongam is he can always roll things back up to the bigger financial picture. And we all take for granted and forget to follow the money. But following the money is probably the most important thing that all of us can do. Because if you figure out who's financing somebody, you can figure out what their motivation is, what their talking points are going to be, and what their linchpins are. And if you don't think right now that this Trump case, these Trump narratives, aren't designed so they can introduce somebody equally awful or reintroduce Nikki Haley, then you have not been paying attention. They are going to do something. Even if it means they have to shoot or kill Trump, they will do it. And it's a threefold operation. It's number one, take out Trump. Because they're not trying to take out Trump. They're trying to destroy the movement. Number two, they introduce somebody into the race to replace him as the nominee. And then number three, they drive somebody off the reservation. They get the bang for the buck. And they don't care if they blame somebody on the other side. They don't even care if they blame an illegal for it. They won't care. But they've war-gamed this out, and they've got AI that plays all the way through. And what Conrad and I were talking about was the fact that during the interview, I was talking about that the elite don't have a vision for when they have all of the things in place that they want to have in place. And maybe I haven't said it clearly enough, which is probably true. But the reason why I say that is really for two very specific reasons. When our founding fathers sat down to write the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, there was massive debate. And they spent weeks and weeks and weeks, but they all had a clear vision of what they wanted the country to be on the other side. They knew they would have to fight the British and kick them out. They knew that they would have to deal with half the population supporting the crown and the other half not. But if you tie it up to the financial side of it, the mercantilism, the British would have been happy with us being a vassal state like Australia and Canada till the end of time. They just wanted cheap goods to be ferried to the UK where the seat of power was, and they would have been fine with that arrangement until America either imploded or they got tired of us like they did with India. And all roads lead back to money. In this case, the people that we're that are architecting this new world order, this Agenda 2030, they don't need money. They've spent the last 12 to 15 years extracting all the wealth they can out of everyone on the planet. They don't need money. That's not their motivation. They just want complete control. They want slaves. And I don't know anybody that would live under that system, even if they were doped up all the time. At some point, people want to be free. At some point, people will get tired of oppression. And if you look at Iraq, Hussein ruled with an iron fist for almost 50 years. And when they threw him off, are they any better? Are they any worse? They're free, but are they really free? I think they're going to get there. I think it's going to take several generations to get there. But they were all tired of living under Saddam. And most people generally just want to be left alone and just live their lives. I don't see a population on this planet putting up with that kind of control for very long, especially to people that are raging pedophiles like these nutcases that we're dealing with now. And there's a lot of different directions this can go in, but the fact that they don't have a clear vision for how they want society to function other than total control, that's not a vision. That's a desire. And a vision is everybody's peaceful. Everybody abides their law. Everybody does whatever they're told. There's no dissent. They believe everything they're told. That's just not a realistic vision of the way people are going to operate. You can't get 500 million people to agree, let alone to believe everything they hear and see, no matter how much you've dumbed them down. So that's why I say that, because there's too many things that are unrealistic about their plan that they don't fall into a basis of reality ever. But that's how over the top these people are. But the bright spot right now is that their plan's already failed. The World Health Organization, that treaty is dead. They're not going to resuscitate it. Over 100 countries said no, and it's because people are awake now. People are like, we're not giving up our sovereignty to a guy like Bill Gates or to China. It's not going to happen. And it's the pendulum swinging the other way now. It's the same thing with the trans, the gay, the Black Lives Matter, all that nonsense. The number of people that believe the lie now are getting less and less and less as the days go by, because they're seeing through it. They're seeing that most of the BLM, Antifa, and the rest of those crowds were all paid actors. And people have lost trust and faith in mainstream media completely. So Tedros is I'm talking to Turbo. Tedros is a fucking terrorist. I don't care what he has to say. They're going to try whatever they try, but he doesn't have any power. It's like the World Economic Forum. Everybody's onto their tricks too. This is the way operations go. You get to a point where you reach critical mass and you're either successful or you're not successful. And, you know, they're trying really hard right now to push the whole bird flu, you know, dipping the dead chickens in the pasteurized milk game. But here's what's coming out now about that. Number one, you're starting to get reports from farmers, especially poultry farmers, that are saying that they're catching people on their property trying to mess with their flock. They're literally trying to introduce it into flocks so they can cull the population, which automatically, if people are paying attention, they're going to start paying attention to this now, which means they're going to catch more. And then pretty soon there's going to be video of a group of people going onto somebody's poultry farm trying to poison birds. Trust me, it's just a matter of time before that comes out. And then at the same time that's going on, you're seeing this conversation about the situation in Gaza, and all the talking heads in Washington are talking about sanctioning the International Criminal Court. Of course they are, because they just convicted Netanyahu. Look, the bigger picture here is every side right now is using propaganda. Every world leader is using propaganda. Nothing that anyone says is real. Nothing. Not one thing. It's all a construct. And as they lose more and more control, which they are losing by the day, the real threat is them taking extreme measures and them taking more and more drastic measures, either on the battlefield to widen the war, or they just do downright use a nuclear exchange. And, you know, that's something that both Conrad and I agree on, is the fact that that is very, very probable that they will use nuclear weapons if they have to. And here's the other funny thing that's going on right now. I don't know if any of you have been paying attention to the solar weather reports by Solar Observer on YouTube. He's been around for a long time, and he talks about the disaster cycles. He talks about a number of different topics. And what's interesting about it is you're seeing, especially on Twitter now, you're seeing more images of weather anomalies across the planet. And you're seeing images of birds flocking to specific areas for no apparent reason outside of their migratory routes. All of that means that there's some kind of a natural disaster that could be on the horizon. Could be. You know, it could be high-tech weapons messing with wildlife, which, you know, if you know anything about some of the sonar systems they're using right now, some of them apparently scramble the brains of whales, according to some of the oceanographers. I don't know how much of that I believe, but it stands to be probable, given the fact that we've invested so much money in high-tech sonar systems, especially in the last 30 years. There's a myriad of narratives out there that could lead us to a culmination point, depending on how desperate these people are. And it says something very, very loud when the royal family says we're going underground for the next month until this new government is formed. That's a significant announcement, just like the announcement that Kate Middleton won't be seen for the rest of the year. Yeah, translation, dead. I've been saying that since day one, that she's dead. And everybody's like, no, she's not dead. She has cancer. No, she's dead. If she's not seen in public, dead. They just did it quietly. But again, it's the same game, right? They throw a narrative out there that she's got cancer to draw sympathy and get your emotions going. And then they try and manipulate you and tell you that she's going to take her time and she wants to be in a private setting when she does her chemotherapy. Yeah, it could be true. I don't think so. I don't believe anything the Windsors have to say or anything their people around them have to say. And there's too many narratives right now that are too weird to buy into any of them. The weather thing, I think that one's got some potential. I think that there is, the Ring of Fire has been active for the last 5 years. If you don't know what the Ring of Fire is, it's basically all the volcanoes that circle the Pacific. And the Ring of Fire has been active for the last 5 years. So there is a number of different aspects to the weather, as well as the activity, volcanic activity, that leads me to believe that there could be something brewing here. If the Yellowstone Cauldron goes up, we're done. So there's a lot of potential out there, is my point. But the one message that I wanted to convey today is take the emotion out of everything you see. And I know it's very hard to do, especially when you see something makes your blood boil. But the more you step back from emotion, the easier it will be to see the narratives in their purest form as they come across, and the less likely you are to get inundated by the messaging. And it's easy to do. All you have to do is just go scan Twitter or Telegram or Truth Social. I mean, to me, Truth Social is Trump all the time, 24/7, all day long. That's all it is. I don't think it's anything else. But, and if you go look at the content, part of that's just the way my feed is set up. But X is the latest and greatest, and it's the algorithms are still running, by the way. And I can see the point and counterpoints playing out. If you just watch your feed refresh, you can see the point counterpoints playing out on your feed. And it's depending on who you follow, et cetera, et cetera. But my feed, it showed all of the De Niro stuff. Then it started showing the counter to De Niro. Oh, here's his friend, a pedophile. Here's his, you know, platform shoes because he's a short little dwarf. Here's all of the, you know, here's all the different weird clothing the guy wears, which none of it's relevant, right? Everybody, you know, all actors are short. I mean, this is just the way Hollywood casts people. But the point is that the point and counterpoint's going on all the time. You can choose to get sucked into it, or you can choose just to walk away from it. And I choose to walk away from it most of the time because it's a lot of nonsense. The thing that I'm paying attention to right now is Michael Yawn. And by the way, if you didn't know this, it's worth mentioning. Michael Yawn is self-funded. People ask me all the time, how does that guy make his money? He's self-funded and he gets donations. And I've posted to both my my Twitter account as well as to Telegram how to donate to Michael Yawn. Guy needs like a $40,000 refresh of his equipment. And he's right now, he's in Japan, and he's working with doctors who are talking about the effects of the mRNA vaccines, the spike proteins, and the downstream effects of that, as well as cancer. And he's done a lot of interviews. So he's getting ready to post a bunch of content. And as he sends me stuff, I will post it. But that's where my attention's at right now, because I think the next disclosure we're going to see is a virologist or somebody from the pharma community that comes out and says that this vaccine was purposely designed to kill people. It's already started coming out. That's why all this anti-vax, anti-government, all of that messaging has started up. So the point is that that's where my attention's at right now, is on the disclosures that are coming out. Because I think that the medical community, there's two sides of the medical community. And I want to remind everybody that you probably know some good people in the medical community. I know I do. But a lot of people took the money. A lot of hospitals took the money. A lot of private healthcare providers took the money and pushed the vaccine. That doesn't exonerate them from responsibility for their actions. They made the choice to take the money. Wittingly, unwittingly, doesn't matter. And you have to, that's something we all have to keep in mind, because we're seeing a number of different things happening right now. Number one, the government is purposely recategorizing people that are dying to say that they're not vaccinated. There's a spike in cancer. There's a spike in unexplained deaths. There's a spike in people mysteriously having blood clots still. There's a spike in miscarriages. There's a spike, a tremendous spike in infertility. All of it's happening right now, and the government and CDC are they're doing their yeoman's work to try and obfuscate it. But it's happening right now, and thank God that there's doctors that are actually coming out trying to talk, you know, trying to bring it out to the public light. But again, it's yet another scenario where you have to use discernment and you have to literally work your way backwards from what they're telling you. And somewhere in there is the truth. And, you know, I think Michael Yawn is he's in the right place talking to the right people to get the actual truth. And I trust the guy anyway, because he's the real deal. On that same note, if you can help out with Troop on the Trooper Care Network, that's another one. He basically has a $500 weekend every time he goes out to help the homeless. He burns through about $500 worth of supplies. And you can do the math on that. That's basically $2,000 a month if you're going out and you're doing every weekend, which he's doing. And, you know, it's not just a grind and financial grind. It's the time and it's the emotional strain of seeing people over and over and over and over and over again that don't want to take care of themselves. That wears you out. That really does wear you out. So if you can help Troop out, I'd appreciate that one. As far as the website goes, should be up later this week. Hopefully later this week, like Friday. I sent back some changes today. So hopefully Friday, that'll be completely up and ready to go. 2 to 3 week lead time on the t-shirts. I've had to change the shirt manufacturers. So, one of them doesn't drop ship. So yeah, it's going to be fun, but that should be up this week. But it's, that's the first thing I'm paying attention to is the vaccine related stuff. The second thing I'm paying attention to is movement on the ground in Ukraine and what's happening in Ukraine. I will tell you that it sure looks like the Zelensky government is starting to crumble and that the Ukrainians are now starting to push back on the conscription that's going on, the forced conscription. I don't know why they hadn't pushed back on it already, but they're pushing back on it. And look, I don't believe anything either side says. I don't believe what the Russians say. I don't believe what the Ukrainians say. I don't believe what the Israelis say. I don't believe what Hamas says or the Palestinians say. Everybody is staging and recording events. And a video came out last week that showed Zelensky working with the director, and they were directing his press conferences and his news presence and his on-screen presence. You don't think they're doing that with everybody? Everybody's making movies now. With the advent of social media, it has made it very easy to produce content. And all sides are producing content right now. And that includes Trump. Trump's creating content too. And I'm saying that, look, I should get this out of the way too. I don't care who the renter in the White House is. I've never cared. All the way back to Reagan, I didn't care who the renter was, because having worked in that arena, having supported the White House Comm Center, you know, worked at the Pentagon and been around that orbit, I can tell you that the president doesn't run the country. That's a misnomer. There's a bunch of assholes around the president. There's a bunch of people at the White House Comm Center. There's a bunch of people in the Secret Service. He's got a mountain of people around him. And every time, and I'll use, this is a perfect example of why the president is not in charge of anything. Trump went on stage in March of 2020 and said, I'm going to make big pharma bring drug production back to the U.S. There is no excuse for us to have to go to a foreign power to get our medicines. We should be producing it here. The next day, narrative gone. I can tell you exactly what happened. As soon as he got off stage, a bunch of pharma lobbyists and lawyers showed up and talked to Mark Meadows. And Mark Meadows said, sir, you can't say that. We don't have any control over that. Done. Issue done. Never mentioned again. That's why I don't give a shit about who the renter in the White House is. As far as I'm concerned, it's a 4-year maximum security prison sentence, laced with a bunch of hate mail and a bunch of on-screen presence, and then you get to build a library. I don't see the appeal of that. If we ever get back to a real country for the people, by the people, of the people, where the president actually does make decisions and is surrounded by people who actually do understand selfless service, then I will definitely care about who is in office. But given the current state and the current level of corruption across all of our institutions, I don't care, because it doesn't matter. And Putin even said it. He said it out loud. And I think this is the part that got into the skin of most of the elite, is that Clinton wasn't in charge. I asked Clinton if Russia could join NATO. He didn't see a problem. Then he talked to his handlers. Issue done. It's right there. And it hasn't changed. I would say that goes all the way back to FDR, even before FDR. And, you know, there's a mountain of evidence that that shows that as we've progressed over the years, especially since Kennedy, that has become truer and truer and truer. And, you know, there's a lot of disclosures coming out right now about who's really running the migrant flow and the government. Supposedly it's NGOs. No, it's oligarchs. That's who's running it. But there's a number of rumors. Yeah, I heard about the Chechens in Fort Bragg. I don't know what that's all about, to be honest with you. I asked the question on that one today, Six Sigma. I'll figure that one out this week. But you can see how people get emotionally charged about Trump because they've made him into a messiah. Trump's only as good as the people that are around him and the people that he appoints to run the institutions. But even then, everybody he puts into a position of power, let's say he comes back in November, all things being equal, we don't fall into civil war, the world doesn't come to a crashing end, and there's no zombie apocalypse, all things being equal. Do you really think Trump's going to be able to reform anything in 4 years? He spent 4 years fighting the media and the elite while he was in office. And more importantly, he fought the institutions themselves. And now for the last 4 years, those institutions have been basically swept clean of anybody that is conservative and replaced with people that are hardcore Maoists. I would find it very hard to believe. And again, I've told you what my answer to that would be. I'd take the entire 82nd Airborne Division in there and I'd arrest everybody to the janitor, even at DOD. Every one of those limp wristed general officers, oh, you are going to Gitmo. We'll vet you at Gitmo. But your rank, done. You are done. That's the only way you're going to be able to clean up DC. And I don't think anybody has the stones to do it. And it would cause civil disorder on a scale we've probably never seen. But that's what needs to happen. And then once you clean up DC and you put some real leadership in there and you have real elections, and that's assuming that you've cleaned up every state. You have to clean up every single state. And then you have to break up every major county in the nation that controls states. Like here in Arizona, Maricopa County should be 10 counties. I think there's 8 million people in Phoenix. So that's 8 counties. There should be no more than 1 million people in each county, so that there is zero chance that any county can dominate the state, like King County in Washington and Maricopa County here. That has to go away, and it has to die a loud, grotesque military death. And then you hold free elections, and you literally hold elections where people come in, they vote in person, they show ID, they prove they're an American citizen, and then you have a vote. But before any of that happens, all of these illegals need to go. Why do you think Chuck Schumer is screaming as loud as he can, we need to give them all amnesty? They're screaming that because they know that if conservatives somehow take over, that's the first thing that's going to happen is mass deportations. And again, that'll drive conflict too. They put themselves in what they think is a win-win situation, but it's really not. It's really just going to be a lose-lose situation for them. But they're going to try anyway. They're going to do their level best to try and implement a cheat. But the thing is now, if they do it this time, the gloves come off. And we have to be ungovernable, completely ungovernable. And I don't think Americans are ready to do that, to be perfectly honest. I don't think they're uncomfortable enough yet. But I want to come back to what I started talking about earlier. And that is, the only way any of that's going to happen is if everyone cuts the emotion out of all of these issues, you disconnect from all of these core issues, and you focus on the bigger picture right now, which is restoring the republic. That is way more important than abortion. It's way more important than the persecution of Christianity. It's way more important than the IRS. It's way more important than any of the other narratives that you're hearing. That is the only thing that is important right now, is restoring the republic and restoring the media to a source of truth, or building a source of truth through alternative media that is beyond any kind of questioning. Is that possible? I think it's possible. Is it probable? Probably not likely. Because people have to get over their own biases and really truly be unbiased. That's very hard for people to do right now. Because they see the, like, most people that are conservative view any of the liberal outlets as completely suspect. And all of the liberals view any of the conservative outlets as suspect. And then within the conservative side of the house, there's people you that are viewed as suspect. The only way to get through that is the absolute facts need to be put out every day, day in, day out. And they need to be verifiable facts that are indisputable. And no bias, no judgment, no narrative, no dramatization. All of it needs to be presented factually. And originally, when the mainstream media came around and the newspapers came around, that was the, I'll just say that the prevailing assumption or perspective of the population was that those sources were unbiased and they were questioning the government. And this new set of malcontents that are running the show, they don't want anybody to question anything. That sure sounds like a tyrannical government. And I want to wrap this up with a short discussion about Memorial Day. A lot of people have this perception that veterans want you to say, you know, thanks for your service. And most of us will tell you the same thing. I don't want to be called a hero because I'm not. I don't need to hear thanks for my service. In fact, most of us, we don't want to hear that. But those Gold Star parents, they want to know their kids didn't die in vain. It's the names of those people that didn't come back that matters. We forget that. We get in our day-to-day life. Because it's not just the soldier that doesn't come back. It's the family that has to live without that soldier. And I can tell you, the best way to say it is, I know Gold Star parents that have never recovered. It's the best way to say it. All of us serve for our various reasons. But I didn't go to Iraq to be a hero. I went to Iraq because we were fucking that up wholesale. There was no plan. There was no real narratives. There wasn't a game plan for anything. It was just go in, take over, and exploit resources. And you got to ask the question, did we make Iraq and Afghanistan better, or did we make them worse? Did anything really change? Did we lose 5,000 plus people for a cause? Or did we lose it for a bunch of rich bankers and the defense industrial complex? Because that's not fighting for freedom. That's not leaving the place better than we found it. That's not setting conditions for some kind of a democratic government to take over. That is enriching a bunch of rich people that don't care about human life. And it makes you question your service. It makes you question whether the lies that we've been told And this is one of the lies that came out of 9/11, was that we were the world's policemen. We were the do-gooders for the entire planet. That is the biggest fallacy known to man. The military's job, their charter, is to defend our borders. That is their charter. These forward bases around the world, that's a construct. And after World War II, we could, and after the Cold War, we should have left Germany and we should have left Europe in total. There's no strategic interest there. If NATO is supposed to work the way NATO is supposed to work, then guess what? There's no reason for us to be there. That's why we have quick reaction forces. That's why we had a Navy. So we can move into the area and augment them if things turn sideways. But we have used that narrative that we need to be forward basing for strategic purposes. Horse shit. It's like the bases that are in Africa. Were we really down there killing bad guys, or were we coercing governments to support the bankers in Europe? Who are we really defending? And you have to ask the question, are we really free? Do any of us really have freedom? Because I can tell you, this country isn't as free like you think it is. There's this prevailing ethos and set of standards that we have to live by, and they're trying to make them more stringent. That's not freedom. People don't ask those questions. You know, and I had this conversation with Colonel Johnson over the weekend, and he really made me think. You know, the Memorial Day means something different now, especially after all the suicides and all the funerals I've been to since I retired. To me, freedom means life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But more importantly, it means that we have a government where people serve their country through selfless service, either in the government, in law enforcement, as first responder, as somebody in the military, but you serve somewhere. A government of the people, by the people, for the people. Means all of us do our service. All of us. The days of people just going and, you know, following their family tradition of being farmers, that's going to have to come to an end. Everybody's going to have to serve in the government and take their turn. That's the only way I see this working. And I, you know, I could be wrong about it, right? Because I'm only giving this a 10,000 foot view of what needs to happen once we get through this. But transparency needs to be the order of the day. These clandestine, all the clandestine agencies, units, all these different organizations that are clandestine, all these NGOs, they all need to fucking go away. All of them. We need to have transparency. People need to know the truth. They need to know what the government's been doing. They need to know what, you know, what genetic testing, what's going on in space, what's going on at sea. People need to know the truth. A lot of our history has been revised long before 9/11. And all of those things that we've been told about this country and what our country's role is in the rest of the world. You know, this term leaders of the free world, what does that really mean? Does that really mean that we're leading the world through freedom? Because there's countries that are more free than we are. And we've been sold a bill of goods. We have to question that bill of goods. And it's the duty of every citizen to question the government, especially local governments. And we've forgotten that. And we've basically been maneuvered to ignore government and leave it to people that are interested in working in the government. If you go back to the 50s and 60s, especially after World War II, those guys came back and they had a new appreciation for what civic service meant. And a lot of them went into government, a lot of them, because they felt like they had a duty to prevent World War II from happening again. And all of us have done it. we've all, like I've told my kids, don't go in the military. In fact, I told them I'd whip their ass if they went in the military, because I saw it changing as a captain. I saw it changing. In fact, the military that I joined as a lieutenant was drastically different than the military I retired from. And training was not nearly as important when I left. And we were in the middle of a conflict when I retired. All of those things matter. We're going to have to reinstill ethos in our entire country. And think about this. What's it going to take to instill an ethos of selfless service across our entire population? What's it going to take to convince people that are in the welfare system and that are generationally prepositioned to be in the welfare system? What's it going to take to convince them that they need to be active and productive members of society and that they should serve in some form of government, military, first responder? I mean, that's going to be the real challenge on the other side of this, is reinstilling ethos and a sense of duty. That's going to be very hard to do because we're unwinding years and years and years of propaganda, as well as years and years and years of hedonism, and we're going to have to replace it with selfless service. Because think about it, what do people measure success with right now? They measure success with stuff and money. Money's not success. I've had money. I've had lots of it. It's not success. It's just another form of bondage. And the way you break away from the bondage is you figure out what the secret sauce is for you. For me, it's my family. That's the secret sauce. Spending time with my family and friends. You know, when I look back at my life, was I most happy with all the stuff I had? Or was I most happy when I was spending time with people I cared about? Always spending time with people I care about. In fact, on my 50th birthday, I went to Disneyland. I know, don't say it, but I went to Disneyland. And it was probably one of the funnest weekends I've had with my kids in 20 years. They still talk about it. I still talk about it. The other time was in Honolulu when we met that World War II vet from the Tennessee. And that was a life-changing event. They still remember that. Had nothing to do with stuff. Had nothing to do with money. It was just talking to an old guy that went through World War II. You figure out what the secret sauce is in your life, you'll figure out what's important. And you'll figure out what isn't important. And you'll figure out what makes you happy. And at the end of the day, that's where you should put your attention. At least in my mind, that's where you should put your attention. It's my opinion, at least. Why it's going to matter is on the other side of this, we're going to have people that know how to really, really teach discernment, teach fact-based reporting, teach interaction. Human interaction, because we have three generations that have completely lost that. We have a lot of rebuilding to do before we can reset the government in the way it should be. And it shouldn't be a big bloated monster anyway. The federal government should be very small, very weak, and have a very specific task. And there should be a mechanism that the American people can use to disband the government on a moment's notice. And it's been bred out of us to do that. Now we have a moral obligation. If we make it to November, that if this government is still non-representative of this body of people, then they go away and we become ungovernable until such a time that we can install a government that represents the people. That's the only way this is going to work. But the propaganda game has been around for generations, folks. This is not a new phenomenon. And what you're seeing right now and what you're going to see over the next several weeks is an explosion of propaganda and emotionally charged events, especially as they're trying to hype up the nonsense around the avian flu. I don't think it's going to work. I think it's going to fall on its face and fall flat. It's what do they do next that's going to be important. So if you hear me say anything, disconnect from the emotions. Focus on the things that matter and stay out of the emotional space. I'm telling you, it's going to be just a time suck and an energy drain. It's not, there's no value add there whatsoever. And as usual, use your stuff, have water on hand. I'll be back tomorrow night. I'm going to be on Tommy's podcast tomorrow. It's 12 o'clock Eastern. I don't know if it's live or if we're doing a recorded version. I honestly don't know. As soon as I know, I'll post it. We're doing the roundtable tomorrow night. It'll be at 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time. Tomorrow should be Trooper, Bill Boopert. I can't remember who the third one is off the top of my head. But the new format is just there's four of us. And then I've got going to be on Coffee and a Mic again either later this week, early next week. I'm going to be on Jim Nussler's show. He does Clusterfuck News. Clusterfuck Nation is what it is. I'm going to be on his show. He's going to be on my show. And then I've got like six or seven more interviews that I've got to schedule. I've literally been, my phone blew up on Friday afternoon after that was posted. So I've probably got 20 interviews to do over the next 2 weeks. But more to follow as it comes out. But as usual, I'll be back tomorrow night with the roundtable. We're going to try and keep it under an hour and a half. 2 hours is a grind, folks. I don't know if you guys can sit there and listen to it, but it's 2 hours of grind. So, and we'll be talking about the Gaza Pier tomorrow night. Matt Bracken, shout out to Matt Bracken for calling that one. He literally said day one, in about 2 months, that thing's going to be destroyed by weather. And that's exactly what happened, which is priceless, by the way. So anyway, I'll be back Wednesday. God bless everyone. One team, one fight.